You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Woo! Happy Hunt Day!
I'm pretty fired up right now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Go check out Exodus Trail Cameras at exodusoutdoorgear.com. Now, on today's podcast, we are talking with a guy who has been on the podcast before, and this particular gentleman has an extreme passion for the outdoors, and this is by far one of the best BS sessions that I can remember, and I'll tell you why. Because his name is Lucas Psycho, and if you don't know who he is, you'll understand where I'm going with this. But dude loves to deer hunt. Dude loves to be outside. One thing he hates is hornets, and you'll hear that story in this podcast. But it's just a great BS session where two guys sit around a digital campfire, and just talk about his trip to Alaska. He piggybacked on a bear hunt. He did halibut fishing, his family. We talk about how he adapts to hunting public land on river bottom ground when it's flooded and what he's doing this time of the year. So we just kind of cover a little bit of everything, and that is the making of a perfect BS session. And why am I so happy? Well, 50% of my happiness today has to do with I just had a piece of peach coffee cake with the hard crumbles on top. Oh man, they put it in a microwave. It was very delicious. And for those of you who don't know me, food makes me happy. And that piece of coffee cake made me extremely happy today. And the fact that when you're listening to this, I'm recording this intro right now on Tuesday at 10:49. Central time in the morning, and I'm about ready to board a plane here in a handful of hours and fly to Denver, then fly to San Francisco. Now, this isn't what I would call my dream vacation, but it is my wife's dream vacation. And as we all know, when mama's happy, everybody else can be happy. And her happiness because of this vacation is leading to me to be able to hunt 2 weeks in November and go on an elk hunt in September. So this vacation is basically brownie points, right? I'm earning my brownie points for this vacation. We're flying into San Francisco. We're going to go to Napa and Sonoma valleys. My wife is a huge lover of wine. So we're taking her there. We're going to do all these fancy winery tours. I had to buy two new shirts with collars on them, because right now the only shirts I own are free hunting t-shirts. So like whenever I sign a partnership deal, I get some Wasp t-shirts, or I get some Exodus t-shirts, or a Lone Wolf t-shirt, or an Ozonix t-shirt. And that's what I wear almost every day to work. So my wife's like, well, you can't be wearing those hunting shirts every day when we're going into some of these quote unquote fancy places. And honestly, I don't give a shit, but you know, again, I got to make my wife happy. So I bought two shirts recently with collars on them, and I'm going to be wearing those in, you know, throughout the next couple days. And so there's that. I don't know where this is going, but today we have a kick-ass podcast with Lucas Psycho. But before we get into that, Wasp Archery, man. Made in America product from the literally the best material that money can buy. So not only do you have a American workforce that's making them, but you have a, you know, the best possible materials used. And, you know, I talked with a guy who works there, his name's Fred Doherty, and he's like really involved with how these, the designs, how they're manufactured, so forth and so on. And just listening to him talk and listening to not only the history of this company, but the path this company's on and the broadheads that they make, it's just a perfect fit for me and a perfect fit for this podcast. So if you guys ever want to take a look at Wasp broadheads, they have mechanicals and they have fixed blades. I am personally a huge fan of the smaller diameter fixed blades, especially the Boss 4-blade, just a real hard hitting son of a bitch broadhead. And I tell you, I haven't made up my mind yet. I might play around with the jackhammer again this year just to kind of bring back old memories. But there's a good chance I say that and still stick with the Boss 4-blade, man. I just can't get enough of those smaller diameter fixed blade broadheads. And when it comes to out west elk hunting, I think that a fixed blade is going to be it for me. There's that. Now, I've talked too much. I've bullshitted with you already too much. Let's get into today's BS Session podcast with my brother from another mother, Lucas Psycho. All right, everybody. On the phone again, we have a returning guest, Mr. Lucas Psycho. How you doing, man?
Doing great, buddy. Doing great. Hope everything's good down there.
Yeah. We had the hot weather last week, and it sounds like you're having the hot weather this week.
Yeah, it's we got a lot of rain this past like 2 weeks. It's been like raining every other day and some nasty storms, and we've actually popped out a few tornadoes here within the area too. So it's been pretty nasty, and they're talking tonight and tomorrow some more thunderstorms. So it's been a pretty wild summer so far, and I guess technically our summer hasn't even started, I guess, but
yeah, for sure. So I'm thinking today we talk about some summer scouting, maybe how last year ended and how it's kind of through the winter transitioning into, you know, summer now, what your goals are, what your plans are, maybe talk about some specific deer and whatnot. But before we do, this is what I'm really interested about is you and your wife recently took a trip to Alaska. I'm extremely jealous, by the way. What did you do on this trip?
Oh, well, we've been planning this trip for like, I bet we've been trying to get up there for like the past 5 to 7 years here.
Yeah.
And it just never pans out, you know, and we had kids and young kids, and the opportunity arose this year that it was over February. I was actually on a ice fishing getaway for a couple days in Minnesota with my cousins, and they were all making a plan to go up there and invited us to come with. And I just kind of jumped on the ball and said, hell yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. You know, let's make it happen. We've been talking about it forever. So we made the plan to go up there, and we spent 7 days up there. Seven full days up there.
Nice.
And my cousin and her fiance have a big old fishing boat. And we went out into the Prince William Sound and spent about 3 full days and 3 nights out there. And we stayed at a cabin, and it was the Port Ashton Lodge is what it was called. And it's nothing high class by any means, you know, up there in the middle of the freaking ocean and all these islands and stuff out in the Prince William Sound. I'll tell you what, if I ever landed the type of job where I could afford to move up there, I'd be there.
Yeah.
That place is incredible, man.
That is definitely on a bucket list to just not, you know, I want to hunt up there for sure, but I also want to go and visit, especially with the wife and potentially kids someday. Was it an expensive trip?
Not for us, because we had basically a private guide. You know, we had a boat. You know, they had, we stayed at their house, and then we went and we just got this, got these two cabins for everybody to stay in, and those, you know,
right.
It was nothing super high class at all. It was just awesome, laid back, and I wasn't sure what to expect. You know, I've always wanted to go, and you know, that was the first time I've been on the ocean, so that was a treat too, and quite the experience, you know, seeing all the different wildlife up there. And one thing I that changed from before I was, you know, went up there to after is I'd never envisioned myself hunting bears ever. You see it on, you know, I guess mostly what you see is, you know, people baiting, and you hear people baiting them, and you sit in a tree stand, they come and shoot them. That's nothing, you know, to knock against anybody that does it. It just doesn't really interest me very much.
Same here.
To do it. And so I guess I never really realized that you could go and like actually stalk a bear, you know, in a situation where you might be able to be successful, you know. Right. And we had bear tags. I didn't have any. I was gonna get one, and then I just didn't, because I just kind of wanted to see and feel things out before I ever actually go and get one. It was black bear tags, and my cousins had some. And so we got to do some bear hunting along the shorelines and in the bays and stuff and up on the mountainsides from the boat. And so what you do is you just float around out there. Once you start looking for bears, you know, like glassing the mountainsides and the shorelines, you're like, holy shit, there is a lot of bears. And I looked it up. I got curious and I looked it up, and there's actually 2 black bears per square mile in that place.
Wow.
So they're just everywhere, you know. Wow. And so we didn't see a whole lot of them while we were focused on halibut fishing. You know, we've seen a few here and there, but once we actually started bear hunting and looking for them, they were everywhere. You were just like, wow, once you start looking for them, they're just there. And so we got to make a few stalks and then my cousins were just using rifle at this point. So we didn't have to get super close to anything, but we did. We did anyways, because we were trying to, you know, kind of got into a situation where we didn't have a good angle with a further away shot. We had to actually close the distance and make a corner around the bend of a bay.
Yeah.
And my cousin actually had to, we waded out into the ocean where it was shallower. And it's kind of weird with the tide. It almost feels like you're in a river, you know, it's with the way the tide comes in and out of them bays and stuff. So the water is like moving and it feels like you're in a river. And, we got out there and it was kind of cool. It was about waist deep, I suppose, is where we were. And we got onto a big bear. It was a big one. It was probably the biggest one we've seen. And he missed that one. He was at about an 85 yard shot and he had the shakes like crazy. And he missed that one. And then there was one other instance where we were trying to get up to the mountainside from the ocean. And so what you do is you just park the main. You park the big boat and you throw a little dinghy. It's a little raft, and you just put a trolling motor on it because it's too shallow to get in close with the big boat. So that's kind of another aspect that was just kind of neat. You know, it's like you see a bear and we just chuck that thing in and we jump in and we take off and we head to the shore. And we got on shore and we had to go through the woods probably 400 or 500 yards before it hit the base of the mountain. And we hit a real deep spot of like some standing water from the runoff in the mountains in a low spot, and it ran for a long ways, so we couldn't really go around it. And I was the only one with chest waders on, and so I'm like all the way 3/4 of the way through, and I look back and my cousins are just kind of standing back there like trying to figure out what they're going to do, how they're going to get across. And the bear, I knew the bear was in only about 150 yards up probably where we could actually see it, where it was in a kind of like a they're kind of like a slide where kind of snow, like a snow chute or something, where it just clears out on the mountain and then all the grass grows in.
Okay.
And that's where they feed right away in the spring. And so I knew if I could get to the other side of this thick line of trees we were in, we'd be able to see that. And it would only be, we were hoping, you know, within 100, 200 yard shot. And, so I was standing there like, are you guys coming or what? And, they're just like, oh, we're going to go down this way and try to cross. And I was like, man, I was like, well, you know, let's just go after this thing. I'm trying to coax them in. Just come on, just get wet. Let's go. You know, I'm ready to go. I want to go see if we can stock up on this thing. And finally, my cousin's just like, well, just go ahead. You know, is actually our main guide. it's my cousin's fiance. So he's real experienced in this place and stuff. And he's just like, well, hey, how about you just go ahead, sneak up through the trees over there and, see if you can spot it, you know? Cause my other cousin's kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to fricking get down into that chest deep water and get over there. And then there's no bear there. And I was just like, come on guys, let's just do it. But so I went ahead and, I kind of got over to the other side of the water, and I looked back, and I was like, hey, how about you give me that rifle? Because right when I got to the other side, that feeling of like, I'm walking toward the bear unarmed. Yeah. I got pretty spooked about that. So I was like, yeah, give me that rifle. I ain't going without that rifle.
Right.
And so they gave me the rifle, and I jacked the shell in. And so my heart pounded, probably harder than it's pounded in a long time, making that 150 yards trek through in that timber by myself for the first time in Alaska, going towards this black bear we just seen, like just right over here,
right,
not even 15 minutes ago. And so I got, and it's weird. You're walking on, it's almost like you're walking on a memory foam bed in them woods. It's this thick bed of moss and stuff like that. That's in this fungi, I guess it's growing all over everything, 'cause it stays so wet in there.
Yeah.
And so you're like, man, I can silently sneak through here. But then the thought came into mind, I'm like, yeah, I bet a bear is super quiet, though.
Right.
So I was like, I was paranoid as hell sneaking in there. And I finally got to the other side, and there was this big black bear right on the mountainside, right where we last seen it. And it was only about 75 yards away from me. And that was pretty incredible. And actually, at that point, I had the vision of, like, how I could sneak up with a bow and shoot it. You know, I thought of how I could do it just in, you know, the couple minutes I watched it. And I was like, I think I'm getting hooked to this bear hunting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I went back and got him. And then we got through to the other side. I coaxed him through. And then I don't know if the other guy who was with us went down. And he was trying to cross down further. And I don't know if that bear had heard him or seen him down a ways, a couple hundred yards, because that bear kept looking down there. And before we could get a shot on it, it ran up the mountain and was gone. But he did end up getting one the next day.
Man.
So it was, and that was pretty, pretty neat. It was just we were pretty much on the last leg of heading back to get out of the ocean and be done with that on the ocean with the boat. And we freaking got lucky and seen a bear on the long side of shoreline. And it was a perfect way we could just sneak in with the dinghy boat into the bay, jump out, and kind of come right around the corner on all these rocks. And my cousin got a shot on him and got it. But and that was only like 60 yards. So I'm pretty much set on going back black bear hunting at some point with a bow up there, you know?
Dude, that's...
I got to try it.
Well, when you go, you should think about me. Because the only way...
You got it.
Dude, the only way I... Like you, I don't... There's something about just like sitting in a tree stand baiting a bear that I maybe right now in my life, I'm not going to ever say no to it, but right now in my life, I'm just not into it. However, that spot and stock kind of shoreline hunting, I would definitely do something like that.
Oh, it was, yeah, dude, it was, it was actually kind of shocking. Like I've never even envisioned myself hunting bears ever.
Right.
I just hasn't been something that's, you know, but you know, what's weird is, you know, we change so much, and like, you know, the older you get, things, you can just look back and go like, well, even just looking at old footage, you know, you can kind of tell how you've changed in different ways and how you react to things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who knows, if I'll ever sit in a tree stand and bait a bear. I don't know. It could happen in time, I guess, but for now, it's the thing that looks most intriguing is stalking one with a bow, because I know a guy could get within 40 yards for sure, you know.
Yeah.
And I can make that shot, so
yeah. So you kind of went on a bear hunt with some people, and then you mentioned halibut fishing. Did you connect with any halibut?
Yep. Yeah, I caught two of them. Nothing real giant. I think I caught a 35 pounder and a 45 pounder. My cousins, though, they caught a few bigger ones. We didn't break the 100-pound mark, you know. We were hoping to try to get into something like that, but we caught so many fish. It was unreal, from rockfish to these little Irish lords, and, oh, man, there was just so many different fish that we caught. And
eat them?
ling cod, and then we did shrimp pod, shrimp baskets that we dropped in and then picked up a few days later, and so we had fresh shrimp, and it was incredible, man. Yeah, we had fresh food, fresh seafood, you know, at camp, and
that's awesome.
It was a trip of a lifetime. It was a life changer. I mean, it totally just gives you a whole different, aspect of like how to look at things. You just feel so small out there. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah. Now I went, on this podcast feed, there's another guy who has a podcast, Hardworking Hunter. And that dude moved from the lower 48 up to Alaska so he can get residency for his sheep hunts and for, so I think it's like an Alaskan resident has the ability for like, man, this, don't quote me, but I want to say like 40 some tags throughout an entire year.
That doesn't really surprise me if it would be something up really high like that. My cousins up there, like seems like they're always hunting something. It feels like.
Right. Just nuts. And I definitely want to go up there. I think my ultimate Alaska adventure, maybe even into the Yukon, would be like some drop camp moose hunt during the rut.
Right.
I think that would be just ideal.
Yeah. So that's been on my list for forever. Same thing. I want to hunt a moose, whether it's a Yukon moose or not. You know, I just want to go up to Alaska and hunt one of them moose.
Yep.
Those things are gigantic, and they just bought a fan boat for moose hunting, and so that's the plan. He's gonna try to get set up there. Get a moose camp set up. He's going to clear out a spot for moose camp in the timber, and where he finds good places to hunt. And he's going to clear out his camp and everything. Once he gets everything set up, and he knows that he can have me come up, and we're going to actually have some chances at some moose, and not going to come up there and not see a moose, which doesn't seem likely because it seems like they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But as soon as he gets everything set up, that's what I'm going to do. Yeah, we're going to go up there. So pretty lucky in that regard to have the connections up there. Definitely.
Right. Anything else that you did up in Alaska that was noteworthy?
Oh man, I'll tell you what. Just being out on the edge of all them islands, and once you get out to where the open water is, and then you got all these whales and killer whales and seals and all these things that are just they're everywhere.
You saw all those things.
Yeah. Jesus. And then, that's the crazy thing is I thought I hope we see some, and you're thinking, and shit, you see them all day, you see their little water spouts that come out of, when they break the water, shoot out, and you can see them for freaking ever. They just shoot up so high. And, it was awesome, dude. I'd recommend everybody make that trip at one point. If you got to pay some money, pay it, because you won't be disappointed. I guarantee it.
Right.
It's one of those spots where while you're there, you're not thinking about like, oh, just how awesome this place is. You're thinking about how do I move here?
Yeah.
How do I move here? I gotta figure this out. Yeah. It's one of those places.
Yeah. Well, man, sounds like that trip was a success. What'd your wife think?
Oh, yeah, she's blown away. Yeah, blown away. We've been talking about going there forever, and we watch all these Alaskan shows, the Alaska Last Frontier, and all those types of shows, and, Deadliest Catch stuff, and, it just gets you that, it kind of just nags at you. You're just like, God, that place looks amazing.
Yeah.
And, you can't really even explain it, you just got to be there.
So
it's incredible.
Another thing you recently did was, and that's something that they don't have a lot of around here, or that I know of, is like when paddlefish spawn, right?
So I'm
like, hey man, let's talk, and you're like, I can't this week, the paddlefish are running. Talk to me about what the paddlefish run is.
Well, they come up from the from Lake Sakakawea. That's the big water spot. If you look at North Dakota on a map, it's a big kind of long, kind of winding water spot up in like the west, midwest to western side of the state. And, they come up from there, and they're going to go up the Missouri and the Yellowstone Rivers into Montana, and they're traveling up to spawn. And, you know, fortunate enough, I live right here at the confluence of the Missouri and the Yellowstone. So this is headquarters right here outside my front door.
Yeah.
It's where everybody gathers. All the campers come from everywhere. So, you know, there's thousands of people that come that first weekend. They're everywhere, you know. And then there's a big fish cleaning station set up that, where they gather the caviar. That's why they clean your fish. Mm-hmm. They take the caviar from the females, and then they harvest that. And then they do like a sort of a charity deal, where they take the eggs and then whatever they sell and all the proceeds of that go to certain charities and stuff like that.
The state takes the caviar.
Yeah, you have to check it in. It's a non-profit organization. I can't remember the name of it. It feels retarded that I don't know it right off the top of my head just because I've been around it so much. But yeah. I think it was called North Star Caviar is like the company. But I think in order to do it, they made some deal where they're going to donate so much of the proceeds to the charities and maybe even I think some of it to the state, back to the state. So, but if somebody wants to read about that, I'm sure there's articles and, you know, write-ups about that on the internet. But I guess I haven't really dug deep into it. But yeah, so anyways, everybody gathers up. And so it's a good spot for them to they measure all the fish, you know, and they get all the data from all these fish and get to see how the how the fishery is doing, you know, how many fish they should probably release or if they should cut back, how many tags that everybody gets, or just get a good number on how the fish are doing, you know. And so it's pretty neat to see that, you know, that's kind of exciting. Everybody's got fish, you know, and they're standing down there. You get to see some monster fish, you know. I think the biggest this year was like 121, I think.
Yeah,
121 pounds, and I managed to catch a 94 pounder. So that was pretty incredible. It was my biggest fish.
Man,
and
do they fight, or do they just sink?
Oh yeah, they fight. Yeah, definitely they fight. Yep.
Man,
and if you hook them from anywhere, and so you're snagging them. You know, you got a 5 ounce hook and a 10 or a 5 ounce sinker and a 10-0 hook, and you just chuck that way out in the river. You let it hit bottom, and you pretty much just jerk it and reel back and jerk it again, you know, and just reel in your slack and you just give it a good swing. And you're just pulling it through the river, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then you just run into them. That's how many there are, you know. There's people that swear that they don't exist even though they've seen them and all this shit, but they've been doing it forever and they've never hooked one. They're like, they're fake. They're fake. I don't know how anybody does this. But you feel kind of silly until you hit one. Then you're like, wow. And I love it. I just love it. It's one of those my favorite times of the year, you know. It's, I just like the whole camaraderie, you know. We get a whole bunch of people, you know, we got a big group of guys that come up, my brother and a bunch of our buddies, and they all stay here and, you know, and have a good time with the guys, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of damn fun.
Nice, nice. Well, sounds like 2018's off to a good start, man.
Yeah, it's going well. Now, once we get talking deer, you'll probably find out that side probably isn't going quite as great.
Well, I think that's a perfect transition. Why is that not going so great?
We're flooded, man. We got this damn river. The runoff from the mountains has got everything flooded.
Yeah.
Everything. And I don't even know where the deer would be right now. They got to be in the hills. They have to be. Because everything we normally hunt, all the woods, everything is just completely underwater. There might be some dry spots here and there, but there's no way there's enough to be. There might be some trapped deer here and there, I suppose, too, but they're gone, man. I really haven't seen hardly any deer for quite a while since, you know, the river came up right around the beginning of May.
So you've lived in that area for a long time, right? And your whole life, right?
Yep.
So typically, okay, so for everybody who doesn't know, real quick, you pretty much hunt the off the banks of the Missouri River on public ground, right?
Yeah. In a nutshell, that's the best way to describe it, right in the river bottom. Yep.
Okay.
Right off the Missouri River.
So, you know, this hasn't been the first time, you know, that river's flooded. So typically, what do the deer do whatever time of year it is, when that river gets real high and floods out all that river bottom ground?
Yeah, they gotta head to, I got to head to the hills, basically. So, and that would be on either side of the river. They can go to the hills, go to the high country. My buddy's going to listen to that, and he's going to laugh when I said high country, because he always talks about he's going hunting muleys in the high country, and I give him so much shit, and I'm like, that's not high country. See, you went down into a valley, and then you come back out. That's just regular elevation. That's and so it's kind of silly and hilarious that he made me say high country there, because he said it so many times.
Yeah.
But it's not high country. It's literally that, you know, you go down in the valleys and you come out. That's kind of what it is, you know?
Okay.
And anyways, that's where they go. They come up out of the valley and go up into the hills. And some seek refuge, you know, and there's certain parts of the river bottoms that aren't underwater. But there's not a lot of timber.
Right.
So what can happen, and what will most likely happen, like every other time this floods like this, is you'll start seeing more deer the closer August rolls around. And whatever reason that is, I don't know if they just eventually start to move their way back down because they, you know, maybe there's their internal clock's telling them, like, it's damn near hunting season. We must get the hell back out, you know, out of the open territory up in the grasslands, and let's get back down to the river valley.
Right.
And so what'll happen is you get a good inventory of what's running around generally in August, because you'll be able to see a lot of them because the water will still be up high enough.
Right.
And but you may not know where the hell they're going to end up. That's the thing.
Right.
You know, they could go a couple miles this way and a couple miles that way. Who knows? Or cross the river and then a couple miles over. I've ran into deer that I've seen them in one spot in the summertime, and they've been 7 miles away, you know, by hunting season.
Man.
And, you know, you can just recognize them just based off of their rack, you know.
So when the river floods and they go up into this, you know, this quote unquote high country, and then do they wait a while to come back down? Or I guess when you're trying to compare it to years where it maybe doesn't flood, do they stay in those river bottoms all year then?
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've always wondered is how many deer leave the river bottom just because of the swarms of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Because they get so bad down here, and like right now they're just hatching like crazy with all this flooded water, and it's getting insane again. But because whenever you see a deer in the summertime up here out in the fields, you know, in the river bottoms, they'll come out and it'll be, you know, light, last light. But it takes them literally 10 seconds and they're 1,000 yards away from the woods. They're just almost on a dead run. You can just tell it, and they're shaking their head like crazy. It's just like they're like, thank God it's almost dark, I'm out of these woods. And they just run, you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder how many, because if you go up out of the river bottoms and into the grasslands and some of the, you know, the badland type areas where it's less wet, the mosquitoes are like cutting, I mean, almost 90% cut down. Like you don't even, they're not nearly even as bad.
Right.
And so I wonder if deer actually just sometimes migrate out of the river bottoms just to get away from them, because we've had years where it wasn't super high water, you know, but the mosquitoes are filthy. And I'd see deer running around right up in the hills up here that really didn't seem like they should be up there. You know, I recognize them when they grow their antlers and go, that deer lives, hell, he lives like 4 miles from here. What the hell is he doing way up here?
Yeah.
And sure enough, he'd end up back there that fall too, living where he normally live, you know, down in the bottoms. And it was like, I don't know. They just have these little summer ranges, and I wouldn't blame them if they, you know, left the river bottoms every year just to get away from mosquitoes, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure some do. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Now, when that river starts to come down, then again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you tend to see some of these same bucks come back to the same areas, or is that typically what happens, or is the other case where they get displaced and don't necessarily come back to the same area?
As far as I know, I haven't really seen a deer that has left the river bottom and not ended up back where I've known he's been living. I guess I haven't really noticed that happen.
Okay.
And sometimes it's prolonged, though. I've noticed where sometimes they stay up there into September, October, and then all of a sudden come the, you know, getting closer to the rut, now they're back down there again with all the other deer, you know. I've seen that. I've seen that happen where they just hang out longer and not come back down to the river bottoms quite yet.
Right.
Does
the flooding ever affect, in your opinion, the deer numbers? Let's say, like, because right now there's a lot of fawns that, younger fawns that are out there. Have you ever noticed, you know, let's say a big early spring flood, maybe somewhere around the time that they're starting to drop fawns, that you've noticed maybe a lot of, a lot less yearlings one year?
You know, amazingly enough, I haven't. Amazingly, I haven't really noticed that, but I've paid attention to it just because obviously you're like, well, if some fawns, you know, drop at the wrong time and that water comes up fast enough, and then, you know, depending on where they're at, they could be stuck, or, you know, mama makes them swim. I don't know. That would be something interesting to actually to look up, is how early can a fawn swim a big river like the Missouri, you know, because they might have to cross the river to actually get over to better ground, aside from going through a completely flooded wood line where it really can't swim and it's got a bunch of obstacles with logs and trees and brush. And I could see where a deer could get hung up in that stuff and probably drown, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm sure there's some, man. I'd have a hard time believing there isn't, you know, some of that, but I haven't noticed anything that is obvious, you know, where it's like, wow, there's like no fawns around, you know? Right. But this year will be a good year. Now that you kind of put that in my head, that, you know, I'll be definitely keeping an eye on it, you know, and see if that does, you know, have any kind of an effect on them. But, you know, they're resilient, these freaking things. Yeah. I'll tell you what, they're tough as hell, and they figure it out. I don't know how they do it, but from the winters to this flooding and all the mosquitoes, them things are savages.
Because you had to fight. You had to fight some high water last year during the hunting season, right?
Yeah. We had some early ice. We had some icing up on the river, and then somebody said that, I think it was up towards Montana, something. I don't know if they got a bunch of rainfall or what it was. I'm trying to remember right, but we had a quick rise in the river. Within days. It was just coming up like crazy, and I'm not sure if they let some water out of the Fort Peck, and that's upstream in the Missouri, and so if they let water out there, then we see that, you know, out of the dam.
Right.
And but yeah, it came up right during rifle season when my wife Jen had her tag, and we ended up walking in thigh high water, ice water. It was ice. I had to break our way through it to get onto a little piece of land that I figured if when the water came up, where we were hunting some big deer, all that timber and everything was underwater, and the closest high ground to that was where we were going, and it was literally, it butted up right against it. So I thought, all right, with all that water and all that timber, them deer got scattered out of there, and I would be, you know, I was betting big money we were going to run into a bunch of deer on this high ground in the river bottoms, and it was a bunch of timber and some old fields and stuff. And we went to walk out there. First spot we checked, couldn't get out there. We would have to walk like 800 yards through, you know, waist deep water. And I was like, that ain't happening. And so I had another idea where we could come through the timber, and that's usually where it's higher ground in there. And I figured if we can get out there, that's where we're going to be able to get out there. But you have to walk about three quarters of a mile to get to that spot where I figured we could get up onto this high ground. And once we got back there, there was like 100 yards probably of water covering this old beat down trail that we were on, two track trail. And, you know, I looked over at my wife and I said, well, it's either we walk up there, and it was like 55 degrees. It was warm out. It wasn't like, you know, a cold November, really early November. And so we were both kind of working up a sweat at that point. And I just looked over at her. I was like, well, we're kind of screwed here then. I said, we can go and sit, you know, way south of here. I don't know what the hell is going to be down there with water the way it is. Or we could go up here where I'm positive there's some big deer. And she's just like, no hesitation. She's like, well, let's just go. And I was like, are you sure? Like, it's going to be cold. It's icing up right now. I mean, it was iced up from the night before, you know, and it hasn't quite thawed back there in the woods. And she's like, let's just do it. Who cares? Let's do it. It's not cold. No, it's not like we're going to freeze our legs off or nothing.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, let's do it. So we just plowed through there and got up there and we were both soaking wet, and you know, our legs were like numb for a little bit, but we had another probably, you know, half mile, three quarters of a mile walk to where we wanted to sit. So we got way out there and she ended up passing a damn nice buck, you know, and that was, his buck came out and it was right in front of us where we thought we'd see something, and came out and it rose up over the ridge, and you could just see his white horns plain as day. And he came up over, and I'm sitting about six steps from my wife, and I look over at her, and I was like, oh, there he is, there's a buck. You know, I thought she was going to shoot. I thought for sure she was going to shoot with, you know, trekking way out there and doing all that. And then, hell no, she said she had her sight set up on a bigger, more mature deer, you know, and didn't matter which deer, you know, it wasn't no particular animal. Just like, she's like, no, that's a younger deer, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, he's probably 3.5, you know, but he's a, you know, 3.5, 4.5, you know, nice buck, 140 class, you know. And she's like, ah, I'm going to let him go. And I was kind of like, shit.
You created a monster.
Yeah. And so she let him go, and then so we didn't get one out there. You know, we trekked our asses way out there in that water.
So have you ever run into a season and when the water maybe just didn't go down and the deer hunting was shitty all year, you know, for the entire hunting season because of high water?
You know, I think back in 2011, I think right around there, I think the summer of 2011 and fall, it kind of did that. And I actually hunted like right next to the highway of my hometown. Like it was a weird spot, but it was one of those things where the deer moved up into that timber because they were getting out of the water, and it had receded quite a bit from where it was. But it hadn't gone down a lot, so these deer, they just ended up finding this little spot where they were kind of left alone, and they were hidden, you know, oddly enough, right below this embankment from some train tracks. And I actually shot one of my better deer, you know, that year, like early September. Yeah, right. I think that was on one of them, the White Knuckle DVDs there, the Never Ending Season. That deer, yep.
Yeah,
it was that one that I shot there, and that was a tough season because the water just took forever to recede. But you know, eventually it always does, you know. And almost, I don't think I've ever seen it up super high, you know, from summer all the way to like November or anything like that. It's almost always by October, it's pretty much gone down.
Right. So then on a normal year, let's say, mm-hmm. the river is, because right now it sounds like you're not doing too much scouting or anything like that just because the river's up.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, yep.
So this time of year, on the public ground that you hunt, what are you typically doing this time of year? And let's just go throughout the summer mm-hmm. know, to prepare for you know, the upcoming season.
Well, I'd probably... Normally, if you know, if the water wasn't high, I'd be trying to during the spring. I would first want to be checking out all the spots that either I had in the, you know, put in the back of my mind during season that I wanted to come back to and check out and maybe get a spot set up or at least investigate a little further of how I could hunt an area that I was hunting a little differently. You know how it is in season. Sometimes you got to just go, all right, I can't really make this play right now because I'll probably just screw this place up for a while if I really try to mess around in there too much. So right. You kind of just wait till after season to really do some real scouting and you know, tree stand work and stuff like that. And so I would, you know, right after shed season and in shed season, I'd probably be doing a lot of like running around, checking things out like that. And anymore, though, you won't catch me out in the woods and past. As soon as it starts to green up and hornets and stuff start coming out, I'm gone, dude. I've the last 3 years have just been annihilated by hornets, ground nesting hornets.
Wow.
And I don't even know what kind they are, but I have been just destroyed by them things. All of a sudden, I don't know what it is, if we just got these new hornets around or if I'm just that unlucky now, but I can't hardly, it's retarded. I don't know. It's my buddy has been with me a couple times, and that's like his ongoing joke with me is like whenever a bee comes around or a hornet comes around or whatever, and he just makes a joke at me, you know, like, oh, like, look out, there's one of them hornets, they're after you again, you know, and because we'd be just, you know, trimming a trail or checking trail cameras. I mean, was it last year? I took three kids. This was like a nightmare, you know. a freaking real life nightmare. I'm walking through the timber with my kids. You know, we had cameras out because normally I'll put some cameras out in, you know, July, August, and just in some certain places where I've found some tracks and trails crossing some of these old waterways where the water had come up and now has receded, and now you got, you know, soft ground in there, and they start to build, you know, pathways in there, and you can see their tracks and you can see the big buck tracks. So that's one of the things I like to do is walk those and put trail cams on them. You know, it's just a real quick, easy way to do it off the river. So I did that with my kids, and we went in there, set the cameras, come back 2 weeks later, and we were going to go check them. And it was just right by the house here off the river. And we got in there. We're on the way back out from getting the cameras, walking in the same way we just walked in there, and all of a sudden just boom, 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 I'm just getting stung like crazy. And then my kids are getting stung. And I'm freaking picking all three of them up, and I'm sprinting along the river, and I jump down onto the bank. And we got our dog, our lab, with us, and we jump down off the bank, and we're in the sand, and I'm, like, trying to throw them into the kids into the boat, you know. It was like a panic, dude. I mean, the kids are screaming.
Were they swarming or something?
Yeah, yeah, they were attacking, man. It was insane. And so all I can think of is we were kind of walking through some logs and stuff in the trail. So I imagine they nested in one of these logs, these old logs. They'll kind of burrow into these logs, and they'll make nests in them. And so I'm wondering if we didn't step on one of those. And I snagged all the kids, and we ran down there, and we got on the bank, and I'm swatting these hornets away, and the dog is biting them out of the air. Like, she's just like, she hates them, our dog. She does that right here on the deck. You know, they come floating around, and she just bites the shit out of them.
Well, that's crazy. So just 1 year, you noticed an increase of hornet activity on some of the ground that you hunt.
Yeah, well, just in the last, you know, like the last 3 years, each year I've gotten attacked at least two or three times, you know, just scouting around, you know. And it's just, what's crazy is I used to live in the frickin' woods, you know, before the kids were really around and before they were getting, you know, they were babies and stuff, you know, and back, you know, 9 years ago, I used to just, all through high school, you know, in the woods and tearing it up and making trails off the river. And like, I was in it all the damn time and never got attacked once, never one time. And now in the last 3 years, it's like, I can't not get attacked. It's like, this is insane. I've had enough of it.
So what you're saying is these days you're trying to get a lot of your scouting done before green up.
Yeah, that's actually a real that's a real initiative now, is to like not step foot in the woods as little as possible.
Right.
You know, as little as possible. If I can go down some wet, you know, wet waterways and shit, I'll go in there. I won't really take the kids anymore, because that was, you know, terrifying for them. And I was like, great, they're never going to want to come with dad now.
Right.
You know, it takes them out there and they get attacked by friggin' hornets. Lucky enough, only two of them got stung. My littlest guy, he didn't get stung. I don't know how that happened, but because he was right there with us and I had him in my arms. And
man,
it was crazy. It was crazy. I think the girls got stung like two or three times each, and I had like 11 stings. It was unreal. And I was sick for like, that made me like sick. Like, I was like sick after that for like 3 days straight.
Yeah.
I don't know, taking all that many hits, or if I had an allergic reaction of some kind or something, but I had like these horrible body aches for like 3 days and like a fever. I was like, this is nuts.
Yeah. I tell you what, I got to share a little beehive story. So back when I was a kid, we had the old swimming pool in our town, and then there was a big drop off the front end of it. There was this big drop down into a creek. And before the pool would open every day, we would go down in the creek, and me and some of my buddies would play in the creek. And we watched this bee fly out of the air and go down into this hole and crawl in the hole. And I'm like, let's check it out. So I took this rock and I pulled the rock up, and there was this underground bee's nest. And my buddy, I got stung like 22 different times, and I must not be allergic to it. Nothing happened to me. My buddy got stung like twice, and they had to give him one of those adrenaline shots, because he was super allergic and his face and his airways were swelling up. So they had to take him to the emergency room. And, and now every time I see a bee, I'm just like, God, like, there's bees everywhere. How does a person who's allergic to bees live?
I know. I think about that all the time. All the damn time I think about that. Because I have cousins and friends and stuff that are allergic to them like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that go do shit that I do, you know, like they're out fishing and, you know, they're doing stuff outside. And it's like, I get stung a lot, even just around my yard. I don't know what it is. They're just attracted to me and I don't even bother them. I'll let them land on me and I'll just keep doing my thing. And, you know, sometimes they leave and they don't bother me. But for some reason, they just like to attack me. I don't know what it is.
Maybe you've killed too many deer, and it's nature's way of saying, okay, enough is enough, Lucas.
Well, yeah, it's nature just going, hey, you gotta pay your dues, dude. You're going to have a good season this year, so we're going to sting the hell out of you, you know, beforehand.
So
oddly enough, last year was incredible, you know. Got stung like crazy and got sick and all that crap, and then last year was, you know, one of the best seasons ever.
So basically what you're saying is that you would willingly get stung by hornets if the result was you had a good year in the whitetail woods.
Yeah, essentially, as long as the kids weren't with me, I'd be fine.
Okay, good.
But I'll tell you what, though. I don't wish that shit on anybody. Having your kids with you and something going down like that, and you're like, you're literally, your only escape route is in the water, in the river.
Yeah.
It's like, that was not good.
Man.
That was not good. And then, you know, we're going, you know, the thoughts going through my head, you know, like, at that point, I wasn't sure if my little guy had actually been stung by a bee or anything. So I was like, you know, I was like, shit, is he going to swell up? What's going to happen? Is he going to be allergic? So I was kind of in a panic, you know, and luckily enough, we, you know, it ended as fast as it kind of started. You know, we got down on the riverbank, you know, about 40 yards, 50 yards away from where it started and got down there by the water. And it kind of just, they faded off and they were kind of buzzing around here or there, but got them all loaded up and got going. But hell no, dude. I would never wish that on anybody. That was not fun at all.
Okay, so now you just kind of, you've hunted these areas for so long now that you just kind of stay out of them until it's time to hunt, and then you go in. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I've changed how I hunt too. You know, I don't do as much wasted hunting, and that's a weird way to say it, but like when I look back on it, I did a lot of wasted hunting where it was kind of like I'd go and sit somewhere just because I had the opportunity to go.
Yeah,
you know, I could go, so I went. And so a lot of times that was just, I don't know, I was just exploring. And I don't know, it's probably not the right way to word it, is wasted, but it was basically, at this point in my life, it would be wasted, you know.
Right.
You know, with the light, you know, work and family and all that shit going on, and the spare time that you do have, you're like, I gotta make it count.
Right.
So a lot of the hunting I'm doing is
lower odds. I mean, you're hunting just the high, you know, maybe just a cold front, or, you know, obviously rut late October. But you know, if it's first week in October and it's 85 degrees outside, you're not gonna go hunting unless you have something like on lock, right?
Yeah. See, that's you know, like, you know how it goes. We got to pick and choose those little spots where you can kind of, you know, I don't have anything to complain about as far as, like, you know, my wife or, you know, anybody, you know, really getting on me about if I hunt too much. You know, she'd pretty much let me go, if, you know, for the most part, quite a bit, you know, more than most wives would.
Right.
But my priorities changed, you know, like things, you know, you just change the older you get, and you don't want to necessarily go and just sit out in 85 degrees in October sitting in a tree when you're like, the odds of you seeing or getting a big deer at that point are pretty slim to none. And so you just think about it like, I'd rather just hang out with the kids, go do something with them, or, you know, have family, you know, do something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then, did you have a good shed season this year? Did you get out and do some shed hunting?
I did. I didn't get out very much.
Right.
But, right by the house, I found, I think I had about, I only found like 10 or 11 sheds.
Yeah.
This place is, that's one downfall of living here now, as aside from, you know, 10 years ago, 8 to 10 years ago, is the amount of shed hunters around here is like, I don't know, I'd like to say it's up 150% from then, you know, like, wow. Or even more. It's just, it's crazy. And really what it is the moose, all the moose, they attract most of the shed hunters because, you know, everybody wants to find a big paddle. Everybody does.
Yeah.
You know, I don't blame them. But it seems like anywhere you go, you know, if you try to get out somewhere, you're either walking on boot tracks or, you know, or there's people there, you know. So
yeah.
I guess I've had my shine, you know, as in shed hunting, you know, years ago when I'd pick up anywhere from 70 to 100 a year for, I don't know, probably 10 years straight, you know. So I've had my time of shed hunting, and now it's more like I want to just maybe even find particular sheds more than anything. I'll try to go look for a certain buck, you know, and if I pick up any in between, then fine. But the whole lore of them anymore is not quite what it used to be because I don't like to battle people for shit, really.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I'm just not much of a fan for walking on other people's boot tracks.
Yeah. I hear that. Yeah. I hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you have any bucks that you ran into last year that you're curious, or maybe you know already that they're still alive, or something, you know, any particular deer mm-hmm. that you're interested in seeing if they made it through the winter?
Yeah. So there's a super tall frame, heavy 5x5 that's not far from my house here. And I tried to kill him quite a bit last year, and because I knew I had so many encounters with him and didn't get him, and this was actually just on a little private piece right by my house.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try to get this guy, and he's a different deer. He's one of those where you get to know him and you're just like, this isn't your average deer. This guy is so smart, and he's got like 15 senses, you know, everything
right.
that goes on, this deer always seems to be one step ahead of you. And he basically taunted me at 60 yards, probably seven to eight times. Just I was within 60 yards of him about 7 to 8 times with my bow. And it's just like, he knew he was like, he ain't going to shoot this far,
yeah.
you know, and I wouldn't, you know, I don't even like to shoot past 35 yards, you know,
yeah.
I really don't. And so I just come into that range where I feel comfortable, then I'll shoot. But if he's out there, and it's just like, he knew that though. Like, and I swore sometimes he would be out in the field feeding or, you know, just in the timber, and he'd just look almost right at me. It was like, he knew I was there.
Yeah.
And, but not get all weirded out or, you know, skittish, just pretty much just
avoid
I
you.
I see you over there,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, you know, and I tried so many different tricks. I even took my wife down there to shoot him with a rifle because I figured it would be a good just first hunt for her, for her first deer. And I thought, and by that time I'm like, I don't know, I can't kill this thing. You know, I was like, let's see if she has any luck.
Yeah.
And he slipped away from us there with the rifle. And because we seen him at, we were hunting a harvested beet field, sugar beet field.
Right.
And so the deer just pouring into it at that point. And we seen him clear at the other end of the field. And so there's a drainage ditch running along the north side of the field. And it's an embankment, so you can get behind it and you can kind of work your way down the edge of the field and then pop up over, and you know, you'd be hidden from the deer. So we got down from the stand once we seen him come out at the other end, because that's like 800 yards. So I said, let's just sneak over there. We'll get down, we'll sneak over, and we'll make a shot on him. And we got down there, and where he was in the field, he's not there anymore. And so it looked like the way the deer were moving off the edge of the field and going through the timber and probably heading out to the outer edge fields, we thought, well, maybe he's in that group of deer that have started moving off that way.
Right.
And so we circled around, and we got into an open area where I figured those deer are going to be crossing, and sure shit, here they are, you know, they're coming. There's does and there's some small bucks, and one doe's got us pinned down. She got close to us and she's staring at us, and we're just kneeling on the ground waiting for him to cross this opening. And a couple minutes later, here comes that 5x5. He's like at 55 yards, walking straight at us, and he's kind of in some brush, And so all you can see is like his face and his horns, and that's it. Right. And he kind of comes up, and I'm trying to get Jen situated and get her gun turned because she was kind of pointing one direction. She had to move about, you know, three steps to the right to get an angle on this deer. And when we moved her and got her set up, he kind of heard something, and he looked up, and you could tell he thought he'd seen us. And he took a few more steps and kind of got higher. He kind of came up on a mound. And so then you could see everything of him. It was like, okay, there he is. Shoot him. Yeah. And she's like, I can't find him in the scope. I can't see him. And she finally clicks the safety off, and he hears it.
Oh, wow.
And because she finally was like, oh, yeah, there he is. And then she clicks the safety off, and he hears that, and he bolts off. And then he runs, and she's all shook up, you know, because, I mean, we just made a hell of a trek to get there, and we weren't there long, and so we're both kind of huffing and puffing a little bit because we were kind of crouched down and, you know, crawling and this and that. And so wasn't your average hunt, you know.
Right.
And so he runs off, but then he stops at about – he runs about 50 yards and stops. So he's within 100 yards still. And I'm like, oh, geez, it's Dan. He turned broadside looking right at us, and we had a clean shot. And so I didn't think she was ready for that. And so she's fumbling around again, you know, and she's trying to get on him. And by the time she got on him, he was running off again. And yeah. Deer were blowing and snorting. And
so he's and on so he's he got, on your hit list this year.
That's the dude, yeah. That would be one I'd like to get.
You think
and
he's
I know
alive
he made
still?
It through the season.
Oh,
I know
you
he
did?
Made it through the season, yep.
Oh, nice.
He did make it through the season. And I didn't find his sheds. You know, I thought for sure I was going to be able to find them, but I couldn't find them. And then when the ice went out this year, it went out right when I was starting the shed hunt. And so when the ice went out, it started to ice jam up, and then it flooded the whole river bottom right down where I would go look for his sheds.
Yeah.
And so that stayed full of water for, God, a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then I went after it receded. There was no luck. I didn't find any, but
I tell you what, one of the best shed hunting days I ever had was a scenario just like that where it flooded in late February, early March, and the deer got driven to high ground, and then it receded, and they came back into this flooded wood lot, and everything was flat, right?
Yeah,
all
right?
The grass was flat, and you could see them sticking out like a sore thumb in that timber when I walked through. I walk in, I'm just like, there's one.
Yep.
Because the egg field didn't flood, but the timber did, and I was just... It was one of those days where you pick up like seven sheds. It was money.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the exact thought I had when it came up. I was like, "Wow, that sucks." But also, when it goes back down, it's going to lay everything down. Everything will be flat. And sure, it was, you know. And I picked up some other sheds in there, but I never did find his, you know. And apparently, there's the landowner went down in there and he picked up a couple good moose sheds down in there too, and so. You know, there was other people in there, and I think they picked up a couple of whitetail sheds or something down there too. But
when are you going to draw a moose tag?
Gosh, I wish this year, but it didn't.
Yeah,
because we already held that. That was already held, and
that's a once in a lifetime.
Yeah,
tag
yeah.
For
I might be 60
win.
Before I ever get one, which would be fine as long as I get one.
Yeah, well, that's
because
cool.
These are some. This is getting to be some. This is going to be some top-tier moose hunting, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, big bulls?
Yeah, 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 some damn good ones. And the hunting terrain, and you're pretty much, if you put any effort into it, you're going to get one, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're not nearly as, you know, spooky and stuff like the deer are. I mean, they'll run away from you, but you can see them. You'll see them, and a lot of times you'll see them before they see you. Because they're usually moving around, and they're making so much racket, you know, and you can get up close to them. And I've snuck up to, you know, and things within 25, 30 yards multiple times. And then I've even called them in. So these ones are callable. So far, you know.
That's awesome.
As long as, you know, there ain't a whole bunch of people doing it. And I've done it a few times just to play with them. And lucky enough, didn't get busted either, you know, because if I call them in and then they bust me, I'm just going to be one of those guys that everybody hates and educating them.
So any other trips this year, any other different states, or are you just sticking to whitetail?
Yeah, I'm gonna drew a Montana deer tag again, so I can go shoot a muley or a whitetail over there.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what I'm gonna go after. I was talking to a buddy of mine that was hunting he was turkey hunting a Montana area this year, right before he came up for paddle fishing, and he picked up a pretty big whitetail shed while turkey hunting, and he said he's seen a pile of mule deer in that area, and he said, man, that place is incredible. And so I was like, so he urged me to go there. He's like, you should go there. You should right. definitely go there. It's only like 2.5 hour drive from here. So.
Oh, nice. Is that, so that's in Montana. Is that a mm-hmm. preference point thing or is it over the counter?
Well, this one you can put in and draw. You can apply or you can hope, like in most years, I think in the last 3 or 4 years, every tag has been bought already and applied for.
Yeah.
So usually there was a lot of leftovers. So everybody just, you didn't even have to apply. You could just go over and over the counter, buy one. Now you're having to apply because now Montana's gotten that much, you know, attention now that they're not actually having excess tags anymore.
Gotcha.
So yeah, enough people are applying now that they're taking them all up. So cool, yeah, you're not guaranteed by any means now. Yeah. I still think you have a decent chance. I'd say you have at least, it seems like 50% of the people, you know, 30 to 50% of the people I know that put in were drawing,
nice.
You know, we did a party draw with me and 3 other buddies. Cause we hunted together over there last year and we all killed deer. And
was that rifle or archery?
Yeah, we rifled last year.
Okay.
But I'm going to try to do some bow hunting this year. I'm going to actually make some time to go Montana bow hunting over there instead of hunting over here. Because, like, right now, it's looking like it's going to be pretty tough, you know, with all this water. So I'll maybe spend some time in Montana, go up into some high country over there, and maybe, you know, chase around some muleys or see what I can find. But yeah, we just did a party draw because we were like, hey, if we all draw, then, you know, great, we'll all go hunting. Yeah. But if, you know, it wasn't like, oh, let's just all, you know, individually draw and, like, get lucky like we did last year, because that's all that was luck. You know, we all drew, and it was like, well, that was incredibly lucky. And so we were like, yeah, I'm really not interested in going unless everybody else is going, do a deer camp over there.
Yeah.
And so that we did that, and we drew, so we're going to go and tear it up over there again. Well, and then I am going to Wisconsin.
You're heading to Wisconsin.
Yeah. So with the same buddies that come up Montana hunting, they figured they want to repay the favor, you know, for coming up and staying here and hunting and everything. They invited me down. If nothing else, I'm just going to see opening day in Wisconsin. Seems like, you know, as a deer hunter, I should see that at some point. Because it's insane, you know, I hear.
Yeah, so, I hear. That's what I hear, too. So
yeah. So I'm kind of excited just to go and, you know, check that all out and experience that, you know, all them shots going off and opening deer season.
Flashbacks to war.
Yeah, the old NOM days.
Well, I tell you what, Lucas, sounds like you got a busy year planned.
Yeah, and if I can squeeze in South Dakota, I will. But that'll all depend on how much I get done, you know, in North Dakota, Montana, and then Wisconsin, and then go from there. So, and I guess, oh shit, I almost forgot. My wife drew her cow elk tag for North Dakota, so we'll be after a cow elk again.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, lucky. Hopefully, I'll be eating elk again.
Well,
because I was actually pretty sad thinking that I wasn't going to have the elk meat this fall, and then we drew, and then I was like, happy again.
It's
that's the best, dude. I don't care what anybody says, that's the best meat I've ever had so far.
Elk.
You know, I don't know, you just, I throw that on the Traeger, oh man, the Traeger grill with that elk, it's incredible.
Yeah, well, there you go, my friend.
Delicious.
I hope you have a good season, and hopefully you and yours are successful so that I can get you on here again and we can BS. And I know I say this to you in text or, you know, through conversation, but I'm going to say it on air. So it puts a little bit more pressure on us, but we got to hunt together at some point.
I know, dude, at some point we got to do something.
Right.
At some point, you know, that'd be epic.
So now, now there's the pressure. So we got.
I know.
It's on record. We have to make it work.
Well, and then here's another one. I'll put this pressure more on me because I mean, as busy as I have been, I still got to figure out how to squeeze the time in to do it. I got to put together these damn videos so I can start showing some of these people some of this hunting I've been doing the last couple of years. I've been getting messages every now and then, just like, "Hey, are you still alive?"
Yeah,
because well, I'm not really active on social media very much either.
Right.
Most of the time, I'm just annoyed with everything I see on there. So, I gotta get my footage out there too. That's one of those things I've been telling people. I'm trying, and then pretty quick, it's 2 weeks later, and I was like, "Oh, I forgot about all that shit. Damn it!
Yeah,
I gotta, you know." Find the time and just make the time to do it, you know.
Amen.
Get something together, even if it's just rough, just chop it up and share it so everybody can see. Yep.
All right, man. Well, you have a good one, and thanks for stopping on the show today, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, man. Take care. Hope everything is well down in the big state of Iowa.
Lucas, my man, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and chit-chatting with us today. Huge shout out to all of the partners of this podcast: Exodus Trail Cameras, Wasp Broadheads, Lone Wolf Tree Stands, Deer Lab, Prime Archery, Ripcord Arrow Rests, and Ozonics. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Huge shout out to all of you, last but not least, all of you. I really appreciate the support that you have given this podcast, man. And there's no way, I don't even know what to say. I'm just going to say thank you. And one thing I forgot to do in the intro was to tell you about the 20% discount you get when you purchase Wasp products. So when you go to wasparchery.com, enter the discount code 9Fingers. That's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, and you will receive a 20% discount off of all of your items, your purchase or whatever. So keep that in mind when you're looking for broadheads this upcoming fall. Other than that, go to iTunes, leave a review, or wherever you download this podcast, please leave a review. Also, I encourage all of you to listen to all of the podcasts on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, because they are just as good, probably better, than this podcast too. So tons of great information, not only on the Whitetail feed, but on the Big Game Western Hunting feed as well. So keep an eye out for that. And social media, right? Facebook and Instagram. Make sure you guys are following. Make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast wherever you download all the podcasts. And I'm telling you, big things are coming. The Nine Finger Chronicles blog is going to start happening this summer. And it's just going to be kind of an inside, behind the scenes look on how I do and why I do what I do. I'm not really here to give a ton of, like, I guess, strategy tips and tricks, because everything that I would say is kind of already out there. So I'll just kind of let you guys walk a mile in my shoes, so to speak, and hopefully you like it. So keep an eye out for that. Other than that, hopefully everybody has a great rest of the week. And remember, if you're going to be in a tree, please wear your damn safety harness.